Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Riley Candell. In today's episode, we spoke with Courtney D. DiNardo, MD, MSCE. In our exclusive interview, Dr. DiNardo discussed the May 2026 FDA approval of decitabine and cedazuridine plus venetoclax in patients with newly diagnosed acute myeloid leukemia. DiNardo outlined numerous important facets of the approval, including its effects on the treatment paradigm, which patients will benefit most, safety considerations with the regimen, and quality of life advantages that have been observed with the combination. Furthermore, she discussed how this approval fits into a larger shift for the AML treatment paradigm and how the AML research field can build upon the approval of this regimen. With decitabine, cedazuridine, and venetoclax now approved by the FDA for patients with AML who are ineligible for intensive induction chemotherapy, how do you see this regimen impacting clinical practice?
So I think this is really impactful. It's not a new therapy in the sense of a new mechanism of action, right? We've had the approval of azacitidine and decitabine with venetoclax for our older, newly diagnosed chemo-ineligible AML patients for several years now. But what's really impactful about this is we now have an all-oral version. So the approval is the same venetoclax, but oral decitabine cedazuridine, which is the oral formulation of the IV decitabine, which has bioequivalency. AML patients, they spend a lot of time in the hospital setting, getting labs, getting transfusions, getting chemo administration. So the ability to do this in oral form, I think is going to be really impactful for the quality of life and for the benefit of our AML patients.
Within the AML treatment paradigm, roughly what proportion of patients won't be eligible for intensive induction, and what have been the prior treatment approaches for this population?
When we think about a newly diagnosed AML patient, we still most of the time think about, should we be treating this patient with kind of a more standard intensive chemotherapy approach or a lower intensity approach, which for most patients is a hypomethylating agent and venetoclax. The average age of patients with AML is kind of late 60s. It's a sizable percent of patients that are getting these lower intensity therapies. I would say one of the things that's happened in our field fairly recently is the idea that using a hypomethylating agent and venetoclax may be an appropriate strategy, even in people who are fit for intensive chemotherapy, if they have genetics, genomics, AML characteristics that suggest HMA-ven may be as good or better than standard intensive chemotherapy without quite the same toxicity. And so that's something that our field is grappling with right now. So giving an exact percentage is a little bit tricky to do, but probably about half and half, if not more than half of patients are going to be kind of receiving a hypomethylating agent, often with venetoclax as their frontline therapy.
Getting into the ASCERTAIN-V trial that supported this approval, what can you tell us about the significance of the efficacy data from the trial that supported decitabine, cedazuridine, and venetoclax?
The efficacy data is very much in line with VIALE-A, right? So the VIALE-A was the study that led to the approval of azacitidine and venetoclax. That was the large randomized phase 3 study. So what ASCERTAIN-V is trying to do is look at oral decitabine cedazuridine with venetoclax to show that the outcomes we're seeing in this all-oral regimen are consistent with a more standard HMA-ven approach. And that's exactly what we saw. The CR/CRI rate was 63%, which was like 66% with VIALE-A, so very close. Median survival was overall the same with the oral DAC-ven, was about 15, just over 15 months, which is right on par with what we saw with VIALE-A. And in responding patients, just over half of them became MRD negative by flow cytometry. This was not centralized. And so that one, you know, is a bit more of an exploratory endpoint, but essentially everything is fairly similar with VIALE-A and consistent with what we wanted to see. So supports the approval of offering this strategy as an all oral therapy.
What can you tell us about the safety profile of this combination? What are the key considerations with the addition of venetoclax, and how could past experience help clinicians integrate it into patient care?
Even though it's all oral, it doesn't mean you give patients a prescription and say, come back and see me in a month, right? That's not really realistic for AML patients who still have transfusion needs and frequent neutropenic infections during the first cycle or two. And so that's exactly what we saw, that there was a high rate of grade 3 and higher adverse events, which were primarily hematologic. So patients with leukemia have low platelets and low hemoglobin and neutropenia. And so that persisted for the first cycle or two. And we do see about a 40% risk of, febrile neutropenia, pneumonias, infections, often in that first cycle. Something certainly to be aware of. At MD Anderson, we still actually admit patients for the first cycle of AML therapy, even with this all-oral regimen. It's probably a little bit overcautious, but just to kind of make sure we're managing patients, we're on top of any infections that happen. The median time to response is one cycle. So pretty quickly, patients are recovering counts as they're responding. And then you can kind of manage things far easier in an outpatient setting thereafter. I would say the other thing to be aware of, well, two things. One is the risk of tumor lysis syndrome. So that is a risk with venetoclax-based therapy. It's not a particularly high risk in AML. You have to be aware and be monitoring, and you want to get the white count lower than usually about 20, 25,000 before you start to kind of decrease the bulk of disease. So there's not as much risk of lysis happening once you start. So that's almost a theoretical risk. It can happen, but doesn't happen often if you're managing patients well, starting them on a uric acid reducing agent, following their creatinine, et cetera. The other thing to be aware of, though, is that there is a myelosuppressive risk with ongoing hypomethylating agent venetoclax-based therapy. Something that we did see in this study was in patients who do have a nice remission, especially a deep remission, they're becoming MRD negative. We did use G-CSF. About half of the patients on study did get G-CSF to help support their neutrophil count while they were receiving subsequent cycles. And we often did shorten the decitabine duration. It's given as a pill 5 days in a row, but often going down to 4 or even 3 days was kind of the optimal dose to keep people in a nice remission without having ongoing cytopenias.
How would you say this approval impacts the AML treatment paradigm? Are there subsets of patients where you may be hesitant to add venetoclax?
The subset of patients that maybe are not benefiting from the addition of venetoclax is the subset of patients who have P53 mutations. In that subset, you get initial response rates that are higher. So if you're able to go to a transplant or there's kind of a finite kind of reason that you really want that higher CR rate at the beginning, that makes sense. But there's no, it doesn't translate into an improved survival rate. So for patients with P53 mutations, often I'm not recommending the addition of venetoclax since it doesn't seem to extend survival endpoints, unfortunately. Otherwise, I mean, for patients where the decision is made that intensive chemotherapy is not the optimal treatment, I think hypomethylating agent with venetoclax is the way to go. And now that we have an all-oral therapy, there are going to be challenges with getting insurance approval, and maybe it doesn't happen as quickly as we want. Maybe we'll be giving the first cycle IV and then transitioning to oral in certain situations. But I think this is a really kind of important step. Really, for quality of life for our patients and making sure that they have this AML diagnosis, but they don't have to kind of live in a hospital setting, inpatient or outpatient, for quite as much time as they used to.
Looking to the future, what are the next steps for this combination in AML and other adjacent spaces? Are there other ongoing trials or studies that you are anticipating data from?
So I think the next step when we're talking about HMA-Ven regimens is should we add something to that, right? Because we talk about how about two-thirds of patients respond and survival is now over a year, but it's under a year and a half on average. And so we're certainly making gains, but there's more improvements to be made. So how can we safely add something to an HMA-Ven backbone where we're improving response rates, we're improving the durability of the response, but we're not adding toxicity. There's a lot of ongoing trials right now that are being kind of labeled triplet trials, where you're adding kind of a small molecule, a targeted therapy, maybe an antibody, to HMA-Ven to try to do just that.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at @OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thank you again for listening to OncLive On Air.